Salutations, fellow workers in America and all over the world. You are listening to a May Day episode of Let's Weekend. I am your host for the most, Brandon Perkins. Joining me as always is Filippo Donolfo, Patrick Mifflin, Teresa Sammons, and Chris Sologi. Say hi, everybody.
Hello.
Hey.
Hello.
Yeah.
Yes, so today is May the 1st, 2020. It is International Workers' Day. It's what, you know, the government tried to deflect from by creating Labor Day. And all over the world, basically, I mean, probably not so much since we're kind of, you know, we're recording this at 8 p.m. in the evening, so a lot of it's probably wound down, at least in this hemisphere, but all over the world, various labor organizations and unions and trade groups and all kinds of stuff are holding rallies, having festivals, taking part in strike actions, all kinds of that stuff, and especially right here in the United States, we had something, kind of something that's kind of, well, not kind of, is unprecedented. We had a nationwide general strike that was completely online. So all across the United States, millions of people refused to pay rent. They refused to go into work if they had to. A bunch of workers walked off the job at places like Amazon. Amazon is also currently being boycotted on this day, specifically because of the way they've been treating the people working in their warehouses. And you haven't seen this kind of worker solidarity in the U.S. in a long, 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 long time.
Mm-hmm.
Why specifically May the 1st is International Workers' Day? Well, I'll tell you about that once we get to Brandon's Random Factoid. But before we do that, normally we would probably, for the last few shows, we've been talking about sort of like what the COVID situation is in our random states, but nothing's really changed all that much except, you know, Georgia is now slowly opening, and we got like 1,000 new cases in like that.
Mm-hmm.
Gee, who didn't see that coming?
Yeah. Right.
So, but that was pretty much the only really big thing that happened. Anything COVID-19 related outside of that will be in the COVID-19 dump truck, which we'll be backing up pretty quickly. But before we do all that, let's do, as we always do, Phil, what have you been up to this week?
I've been listening to the Wheel of Time. I finished book 9 and 10 this week.
Nice.
Yeah, going through those real quick. I'm going to start book 11 tonight. Then I'm going to go back to book 0, because why not?
Yeah.
Figure I'll do all the I'll do all the Robert Jordan ones first, and then I'll get into the Brandon Sanderson ones after that.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been doing that, other than that, well, Monday I got Streets of Rage 4, and I've been playing it all week, and it's amazing. And I'm going to talk about, and we're going to deep dive on it on Sunday. So I'm going to save most of my talk about that till Sunday. And yeah, really, that's just kind of been it. I'm kind of over this whole self isolation thing. So, but we're kind of still stuck with it, so yeah, here we are. The only other thing I can point out is, if you're able to make masks, you can have a pretty decent little side business, as my mother was finding out.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there's that, and that's kind of it for me.
For me, I'm also on Streets of Rage 4. Thank you, Phil. And again, without going too deeply into it, this is definitely finding a prominent home on my Game of the Year shortlist thus far. It's really everything I want from a revitalization or remake or reboot of a classic franchise. And they modernized it just enough to keep it fresh and interesting.
Yeah, I gotta say, I am loving the art direction that they've got going here.
I just can't wait to see all the combo videos that are going to come out of this game. Because combos are a thing, and I'm sure, not 48 hours along at this point. yeah, we've barely scratched the surface, so I'm looking forward to that. And in addition to that, I'm, you know, I've got my 8 terabyte external hard drive. There's no data cap at the moment because of the isolation, and so I'm just falling all over myself trying to find things to watch or play or whatever.
Nice.
But I haven't really done a whole lot with it so far, but you know, for the most part, I'm just consolidating the contents of my older drives onto it. But, yeah, that's pretty much been my week.
All right, Teresa, what about you? I mean, let's be honest. We all know what it is, but go ahead.
I have downloaded Streets of Rage 4, but I have played Animal Crossing. Fucking Animal Crossing. However, I have not played yet today. So there's that. I've also been playing a little bit of Final Fantasy 14 because my job ended yesterday. So yesterday at 4:31 p.m., it was time to renew that subscription. And Kingdom Two Crowns came out with a new biome that is inspired by Bloodstained. So we've been playing that too. And that's pretty fun. Definitely has a look to it, of course. So I decided to get a gray market subscription for Sling TV. And I'm really glad that I didn't pay, like, you know, regular price, because broadcast TV still sucks ass.
Oh, yes.
Oh, my God. Like, everything that I tried to watch that was a documentary, it was like a fucking mockumentary. It was a tantalizing, sensationalized documentary with, like, honestly, probably 3 minutes of substance within it, and the rest of it, shit. But there are some streaming things that I'm sure I could get on Netflix and Hulu. So we watched Jumanji. Kid really enjoyed that. And the graphics do not fucking hold up at all.
Oh, we're talking about the Robin Williams one?
Yep. And
yeah.
Guys, I just don't remember him being that young. It hurt for a while, you know, watching that one. And then we watched Ferris Bueller, which Scott claims to hate, but yet he sat there and watched it. And we finished off season 2 of Star Trek Discovery and picked up and watched most of the short treks. But it's seriously, it's fucking Animal Crossing. There's nothing. Yeah, there's nothing else. I'll come up for air in July.
All right. And Chris, what about you?
Yeah, so it's just been busy all week. Started spending my, $1,200, managed to get that, put into my accounts on last Friday, which was weird having to go through like the drive through for the first time ever. Usually I'm just used to going in, just saying, you know, put this in the account. And I even had to ask, like, okay, what do you need for this check? Like, what kind of cards or whatever? And she's like, oh, just driver's license and the check. It's like, okay. Kind of put in that same kind of tube system that it's been around for probably 30 years at least.
And it's super great for social distancing.
Yeah. But it's also like, have we not gotten anything that looks like it's made, you know, in the last 5 years? It's all weird, but got a new mattress, which I've been needing for a while, which was a bit weird going into, it was a BJ's Warehouse, which I've never been in for, at least not for a long time, a few years at least. My dad has a membership there, so he's insistent on going there first. And that's where we got it. The place is, like, really dingy looking. Like, they don't even have, like, it seemed like really dim lighting, that kind of stuff. I was like, this place actually in business or something? Cause it doesn't seem like it.
Maybe they're doing like an energy and cost cutting thing, you know?
Maybe.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Maybe they're just cheap.
But it took us forever to get checked out because they couldn't find the right like a UPC to scan. I guess the one that might have worked was like ripped in half somehow. So they had to go find like the item number, and it wasn't on the mattress itself. I mean, the packaging, and they had to go over to the sign, which is on the other side of the building, basically. So it's like, all right, this conspired to make this take as long as possible. But managed to get it back, and works well so far. One of the other things I got was an 8-bit Doe SN30 Pro Plus controller.
Ooh, how do you like that? I've been eyeballing that.
It's they make good. Great controllers.
Yeah, it's $40 right now, $10 off at Best Buy, I think. I ordered it there. Got it way faster than anything I've ordered off of Amazon in the last couple months. It took like 3 or 4 days to get it. It took me a bit to get it synced because it's just weird syncing it up. You don't just like plug it into the dock or anything. I ended up having to restart the switch first to get it working. Once I got it working, it works pretty well. It has cool software on the PC, so you can like remap the buttons there, which is kind of useless now because the most recent update offers that in the US. Mm. But you can also set up macros. You can change how far you have to push the sticks or the triggers in to activate the 100%. So you can sort of shorten that if you're playing stuff that needs it, which is not really on the Switch, because that's just an analog button. But for PC stuff, you can definitely make some good work with that stuff if you need to. So yeah, it's a pretty cool controller. And one of the other things I ordered is an Elgato 4K 60 Plus, 60 Pro, whatever it is, 4K Pro 60, whatever it is. It's a internal capture card for the PC that'll replace my external card or external capture box. And because it's an internal card, it won't need it won't have the input lag that the current thing has. So I can just play my console games if I'm streaming that through OBS, which is pretty cool. That was like $250, I think. A little bit expensive, but it's about as good a time as any to buy it.
Mm. You'll get a lot of use out of it, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I won't get it until next week, because that was Amazon.
But at least it's not freaking June, like everything I wanted to order.
Yeah. That was weird when I was ordering a present for my mom for Mother's Day, which it's not going to arrive until the 14th.
Mm.
But I picked up a package of like 4 boxes of cereal, and that's going to arrive the 7th. Because they were going to charge me $10 for shipping for this thing. It was like $20. I was like, no, we're not doing that. I got like a four box of Life cereal for $10, and I was like, all right. That's $10. It's worth it to not have to pay for shipping. Mm. I won't need cereal for a little while.
Okay, but did you get Cinnamon Life?
Yeah, that was okay. The only one they had.
Ask you the real questions here.
Yeah. So
I will kind of point out though that I think Amazon is kind of overestimating the time that it's taking. Because I have
I've
some
had
stuff.
Some stuff.
No.
Yeah.
What they're doing is they're delaying the point that they will ship. Because it's 2-day shipping, but they just wait till 2 days before. Supposed to get there, and then they ship it.
But no, not in the cases that I've experienced here.
That's definitely what's happening here.
Yeah,
I've had probably about half of my stuff show up a little bit early, but not much. Like, there was a sheet music book, and they said it was going to be fucking April 20th, and it was like April 19th. Mm-hmm. And I had ordered that shit over 30 days before that. And, yeah. Like, that was pretty early for them to start, but it's gotten worse. Like, everything that I want to buy, I wanted to get a new heater for my fish tank. Fucking no. June. And they have it in stock. They have plenty of them in stock. But they don't think that it's current or necessary, but my fish fucking disagrees with him.
Yeah.
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 I'm noticing that, like, the specialty stuff, like, tends to be a bit more delayed. But there's also, like, you have alternatives. You don't have to buy from Amazon. There's, like, if you order from Best Buy, like you found out, that ships right away.
Yeah,
Walmart
or pick
is
it
actually
up
pretty quick. But
you know, my go-to for everything has been eBay. You guys, seriously, eBay is saving my ass here.
Really?
Yeah, like my mother-in-law told me that she had run out of yeast. She couldn't make any bread. And they're having some trouble getting bread. And fucking Amazon, no. Just fucking no. But eBay, I ordered it, and some dude from Pennsylvania already shipped it today, and I ordered it this morning. So, like, all of my stuff, when I get the fish heater, it's gonna be eBay. Mm. And it's going to be tonight, because I really need that heater.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's been the stuff I've been buying. I have some ideas for other stuff, but for now, kind of just letting it sit for a bit. But yeah, I've been watching Extraction on Netflix. It's the new Chris Hemsworth movie, which is really quite good. It has some really great action to it as well. It's the movie that's about the son of a big criminal overlord, I guess. Gets kidnapped by a rival overlord, by his people, and then Chris Hemsworth gets hired to retrieve him and get out of the city so he can get extracted and get paid for that. And the plans go to shit pretty quickly. He gets fucked up pretty often. Yeah, there's a lot of cool action scenes in it. And ends in an interesting way with, I'm still not sure what happened, but also watched Middle Ditch and Schwartz, which is like a three episode, they're like three improvised specials, improvisation comedy specials that Thomas Middle Ditch and Ben Schwartz do. I watched the first one, and there's a hell of a thing that hit. That happens at the start of it, because they just ask questions, ask a question to get some ideas from the crowd, and gets from one group that spirals into a whole bunch of information that they use to do the rest of the stuff that they want to do for that whole special. And there's some great stuff there, a lot of cool stuff. It's pretty well done for anybody that's into improv comedy, that kind of stuff. Definitely check that out. Play more Animal Crossing. That was the first thing I did with the new controller to test it out. And yeah, it works well. The game. I got my third expansion on the house, which means I can put more shit in there. I did find out a weird thing. I had this shelf in one of the rooms that was putting all my turnips in, and found one still hanging around there because it was on top of the shelf. I didn't realize it was there. I didn't realize that was a spot you could put things on, so I put a fishing tournament trophy up there so nothing else gets stuck up on top of it.
Did you get your ants and your flies? Was it spoiled yet?
No.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. Yeah, I got my third room. All I did is I put a couch, I changed the floor and the wallpaper, and then put that last batch of turnips on the floor. That was all in that room. It's just a couch and a thing of turnips. But yeah, I got the art gallery in the museum opened up, which closes it for a whole day, which is kind of annoying.
Yeah.
What else I had? Flick show up, and I finally got a statue made of a moth, which isn't all that big as I was hoping it would be. What else? I got the upgrade to the Nook's Cranny, so now it has five items, and like there's like usually one that's super expensive for whatever reason. But I just put the campsite in there. It's next to the museum. So that, I guess, KK Slider and other people can show up at some points. And yeah, that was the thing I streamed yesterday. I had been streaming for a little bit just because of no time to do anything. I streamed that to kind of check out the controller and all that, and ended with a little Breath of the Wild to try to remember how the hell to play that game. Because it is not control like normal games. It took me a while to figure out how to just run, which is on X, the top button. Eh. I was like, that's not usually how it goes, but whatever. Also been playing some Gears Tactics, which is the newest Gears game that is basically, hey, what if we took the Gears of War universe and made an XCOM-style strategy game out of it?
Mm-hmm.
And it works pretty well for the most part. So it's kind of a bit more, the chapters are kind of more long than typical XCOM missions. Like the first one you do, it's very much throws you into this kind of, you're going across this plaza, then some shit happens and you have to go back, and some shit happens, and then you have to go this detour, going through fights along the way. It kind of breaks them up a little bit with some story stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And the kind of the main difference between this and XCOM is it doesn't really have like a home base that you have to upgrade. You do have like a crew that you can upgrade with like skill trees and all these like passive skills and all this sort of stuff that you can do. Then there's a lot of items you can pick up because they're like crates you can pick up in the level that can give you like modifications for your guns, maybe perks that can get attached to that stuff as well. There's a lot to it for this. It's, you would expect to be a bit more simple in terms of like the way you customize your different gears, but it goes all in for as much as it can. Yeah, the missions, I'm still pretty early. I just did that first mission, which was like a good 45 minutes to an hour or something like that. But the game itself, like, it's only on PC right now. I think Xbox is coming a little bit later, but it has a pretty cool benchmark system that even gives you like a bunch of information about how the system's running while it's doing all this stuff. Shows you like the a lot of good diagnostic stuff. Then it shows you like a chart, and you're like, "What the fuck is this chart showing me?" Because it's like a lot of like heat map kind of stuff. It's weird.
Mm.
Yeah, it's pretty weird, but so far not too much of the XCOM bullshit, but I've had some high percentage shots that I've gotten that I've missed. But they also have three different states of hitting enemies. There's like a full shot, there's a partial shot, and then a miss. So you can kind of get a little bit of damage if you don't get a full shot in, which is good because instead of having like, you know, like 5 bars of health, it's like 500 hit points. So if you get, you know, partially hit, you might only lose like 15 health out of that instead of maybe like 80 or 100, something like that, some bigger chunk. But they're also like support skills that you might have, like a grenade. I think one of my guys has a grenade that's literally just gives you health back. It's like a stim grenade, it calls it. A lot of weird stuff like that. And yeah, the way they do it is they don't have, it's not set up like XCOM in the sense that you have like two points for doing stuff. It's usually, so far it's been 3 to start. So I can usually get around to move, and then you might, if you down an enemy, don't kill him, you can go for like a finishing move if you can, or you can just, you know, get around the area and for 3 points, that kind of stuff. There's a lot of different options that you can use to do this stuff, and it seems like a lot of the game is built on Overwatch, where you are, you know, setting up a cone specific to where you want your guys to aim at anything that moves. And enemies do the same thing as well, so you use your pistol to disable their Overwatch, so you can get some little damage and just knock them out of Overwatch. that kind of thing. So yeah, there's like a lot of detail in this, more than you would expect out of its. But being a Gears game, I have no interest in any of the story stuff. but the main guy you're using is, I guess, the father of Kate Diaz, who's been in the last two Gears games. And they tell you every time you start the game, you're going to meet the Coltrane in Chapter 1, Act 1, Chapter 4. So then you're going to get like a special skin to use for him that puts him in his like football outfit. Yeah. That kind of thing. So it's like, all right, I guess he's going to be here too. I don't know if any of the other known Gears people are going to be in this, but there's at least some interesting stuff in there. Yeah, it's kind of a kind of wild that they got fucking scooped out by an actual XCOM game a few days earlier with Chimera Squad, which is also doing its own crazy thing with the Grandia style like turn system. It shows you like the order that the enemies and your people are going to do. And their abilities that can manipulate that, but not as I would say the one issue I have is it doesn't tell you like, oh, it's going to move you up to this point. It doesn't like show you on the time bar. Like, hey, you do this, you're going to move up to this spot for the next turn, that kind of thing. I think it should do, but yeah, if you like a strategy, XCOM style strategy games, there's two big ones out right now. And, I guess the XCOM just turned $20 now instead of 10, like it was for the past week. But yeah, there's some cool stuff out there. But I should be streaming tomorrow. I think I'm going to stream XCOM so I can get mad on stream. I was playing that when we were doing the Dazer update last week, and I almost yelled. I almost turned the mic back on just to yell "fuck."
Mm-hmm.
So Brandon would know this. I was doing an evac mission. And you can probably guess what happened on the last turn.
The person you were evacing died?
They got knocked out. It ended. I was like, what? Oh, fuck. Luckily, it saves for every single turn, so I just save scum back to the previous turn and put them in a different spot.
Mm-hmm.
I'd hopefully not get them killed and end up doing that. But it just got knocked down, and it's like, all right, mission over. Let's go. I'm like, what? What the fuck? That's some different XCOM shit right there. But yeah, that's been it. How about you, Brandon?
Yeah, so before I go on, I just got to say, because Phil's been talking about reading The Wheel of Time, I did not realize until recently just how shamelessly Terry Goodkind had been ripping off from the Wheel of Time series until recently. It's pretty obvious when you start to look at them side by side.
Never read any of his stuff, so I wouldn't know.
Yeah, don't.
Okay.
Just save yourself the trouble. Imagine a mediocre fantasy writer who is really in Ayn Rand. Oh. That's Terry Goodkind.
Oh, that hurts.
Oh, okay then.
And he constantly talks about how he says, I don't write fantasy, I write works with very deep philosophical means, you know, themes and shit like that.
Yeah. If he has to tell us that's what he's doing, that ain't what he's fucking doing.
When it was announced that Robert Jordan was like really ill, mm-hmm. and he had to miss that, what was that, one convention that he pretty much attended?
Yeah.
Terry Goodkind, which was also there on a panel, and he basically mocked them for the fact of it and said that, you know, I recently got checked and apparently he told me I have the heart of a 16-year-old boy. Yeah, for those of you who don't know, Robert Jordan had a heart ailment.
Mm-hmm.
That's just
he's rude. A dick. He's a massive dick.
That's fucking rude.
Mm-hmm. But, all right, yeah, so what have I been doing? Still playing Red Dead Redemption 2. I finished the main story last night. It basically ends right sort of somewhat before the first Red Dead Redemption begins, with the National Bureau of Investigation people basically watching over your ranch. You know, it's like, yeah, we're going to have to get this guy to do stuff for us. So I'm also, since then, I'm probably going to go do some stuff on the online component because I haven't done that in a while. But as far as gaming goes right now, I'm trying to kind of save up because I want – it's kind of like a thing between this or – because I'll just go ahead and say it. For those who don't know if you probably do already know this, but I'll go ahead and say it anyway, and we're probably going to talk about this on last weekend. They gave a new release date for The Last of Us Part 2. It's going to be next month. Freaking called it.
Mm-hmm.
Told you that's what was going to happen. Unfortunately, somebody got into the story files and leaked them.
People gotta go ruin everything.
Yeah, and let's be honest, you know how the gaming world is right now. And there's just a whole bunch of people who are just praying for this game to fail because they either don't like the direction that the story is going, or they think the Neil Druckmann is trying to have some kind of agenda or whatever. I hate gamers. I really do. But other than that, still reading, and I must hereby declare that Elmore Leonard is indeed God. I am consistently impressed with his output. I am currently reading Rum Punch, which, for those of you who don't know, that is the basis for the movie Jackie Brown, you know, the Tarantino movie with Pam Grier. And it's... He is a master of creating atmosphere. All of his stories are basically pretty much always about people who are not particularly likable, and they're usually very shady, but somehow you end up rooting for them anyway. Like, for example, in Rum Punch, the primary protagonist is this woman named Jackie Burke, who is a 40-something-year-old flight attendant who has a side business on where she helps this guy, this gun runner named Ordell. She basically, like, transfers all of his multi-thousand-dollar fees with her in a little envelope cross-country. But she ends up getting caught by the feds because somebody in Ordell's group of people tipped them off, and now she's teamed up with a bail bondsman to try and, like, bring Ordell down and all this. It's just, it's good shit. It's really good shit. And his, I talked to the other book I have by him, which is his, Complete Western Stories. I think I mentioned this, the movie, well, it's been filmed like 5 times. The movie 310 to Yuma is based on one of those stories, and it gets progressively more and more violent every time it's adapted and readapted. But in the original story, it's actually very – like there is violence, but it's actually like kept to a minimum until like near the very end when they're trying to get Jack Kidd onto the train and his gang comes out and basically tries to fill the train with lead as it's slowly leaving the station. It's good shit like that, yeah. Other than that, anime, still watching anime. I finally redid my subscription on Funimation, so I'm watching all of the anime that they got on there, including Noir, which, again, highly recommend. Great show. Probably one of the first, like, quote-unquote girls with guns type anime I've seen that is almost completely lacking in any kind of fan service. Like, the character designs are already good enough, but, like, at most you'll maybe get, like, you know, them sunbathing somewhere, and that's about it. There's, like, a bath scene in there, and you see nothing except the head and one arm. Here's the thing. It is a really violent anime, but there's barely any actual bloodshed that you will see. And I found out recently this is because for the TV station the anime originally aired on, they had specific guidelines that they had to follow through. And Studio B Train, who were the people who made this anime, they said they originally intended that, you know, we'll put this through and then, you know, we'll add in the blood afterwards for the DVD release. But the people doing the series are like, you know what? We actually kind of like the effect this has, so we'll just keep it as is. But yeah, it gets really, really bizarre towards the end. Towards the middle. I haven't finished it yet. It goes from being like the story of like a couple of assassins who like take on contract killing jobs into like this weird ancient conspiracy about this ancient religion about trying to bring forth the apocalypse. It's insane and it's amazing. It is probably one of the most well-written anime I've ever watched. Like, no joke. And other than that, thanks to the help of Pat and Teresa, I am sort of taking my first baby steps into the world of investing.
Nice.
It's gonna be fun.
Yeah, but see, the thing is, I'm still waiting on my stuff to be approved.
Yeah, it took like 4 days or something for my account to be funded.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I got $25 set aside that I went ahead and, you know, got ready to do stuff. And I'm going to take the advice that Pat and Teresa gave me with what to do with that.
Yeah, although the main oil stock that I was telling you about before has kind of changed in nature. They did a sort of revaluation of it where it's like they took every eight stocks are now one.
Mm-hmm.
And then they just you were compensated for any leftover stocks that you owned.
Yeah. Is it still worth it?
I still think that the oil market in general, while it's still in the tank, I mean, you've got all these states talking about getting going again, and you know it's going to take oil to do that.
Yeah.
So.
Well, as soon as the people at Robinhood decide to finally step up and say, okay, you're approved, I'll get to doing it. But till then, I'm at their mercy.
No, I was able to buy like a day before I actually got my approval email. Mm-hmm. So give it a shot.
I'll advance it.
Yeah. Let me just quick question. How long did it take you guys before you started to get any money out of it?
Well, my money's still in it. So,
oh, okay.
I mean, I'm just holding on to my stocks for now.
Okay.
Yeah, until there's like a really big payday or the stock splits or something, which it's not because I bought GE stock. I'll just tell you who I bought for now. But yeah, I did some penny stocks back in the day and I made a little bit of money off of that. But mm-hmm. I did penny stocks again and I kind of lost my ass on that.
Wow.
So I look at this like, you know, taking $35 going down to the casino. This is fun money. This isn't, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If I don't, you know, if I lose it all, I'm not going to get too upset. This is entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
But right. I hope that it's not.
All right. Good to know. Okay. All right. So moving on from there, we got anything else we want to add before we move on?
Nah, anyone? Just being at home sucks ass.
Yeah, tell me about it.
So much we want to do, but it'll hold. It'll hold. Mm-hmm. It has to.
Yeah. But all right, so then it is now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And since it is, in fact, May Day, I decided it was time to talk about why this particular day was chosen as International Workers' Day. Because as a lot of other countries like the United States and Canada know, we actually do have our own quote-unquote official Labor Day. Usually sometime in the summer, you know, something like that. But most other countries, this is in fact the International Workers' Day. And the reason this ended up being the day it was chosen is because of a cycle of events that happened in Teresa's part of the world in Chicago, known as the Haymarket Affair.
Yep.
So
infamous.
Mm-hmm, infamous. It is internationally known. It is pretty much the event that galvanized the international workers' movement into increasing militancy. And I'm going to tell you why. So first thing you know is October 1884, the Federation of Organized Trades and Labor Unions decided to vote on the May the 1st, 1886, as the day by which the 8-hour work day would become standard. And by that, they meant that would be the standard demand that all related trade unions would start fighting for. Now, in most countries now, the 8-hour work day is sort of a standard, you know, theoretically, at least. Mm-hmm. It sure as hell isn't here in the United States, but that's another story.
Yeah.
So as that day approached, all these unions in the United States were getting ready to start a general strike. You know, on May 1st, as it came, thousands of workers all over the United States went on strike with the cry of 8-hour day with no cut in pay. Exactly how many people took part in this strike is unknown, but estimates go everywhere from 300,000 to 500,000 people. In New York City in particular, there was demonstrators numbered as large as 10,000. Detroit was 11,000. Milwaukee had about 10,000 themselves. And in Chicago, there was 30 to 40,000 workers who had gone on strike. And there was perhaps twice that amount who had actually got out into the streets participating in various marches. Now, it was on May 3rd that things started to get a little tense. A bunch of striking workers in Chicago that were near the McCormick Harvesting Machine Company, their factory, they had recently been locked out since February, and the workers at McCormick were predominantly of an Irish American heritage. And you know how the Irish were treated in the United States around this time period.
Like fourth-class citizens.
Yeah. Now, they actually came under attack from who else? The Pinkertons. And look, there's a reason why the Pinkertons were one of the main villains in Red Dead Redemption 2. Mm-hmm. It's because they were in real life. Mm-hmm. They were bastards. Absolute scumbags. They got into a sort of a tizzy. Nobody was hurt, but it basically galvanized the rest of the labor movement. So it was then that a rally was declared that was going to take place on May the 4th at a place known as Haymarket Square. Now, Teresa, you're in Chicago. Where is Haymarket Square located?
It's somewhere downtown, dude. It's like 20 miles from where I live. But the site that this happened at has been turned into something else.
Yeah. So the rally began. Originally, it was pretty. It wasn't really. It was peaceful. There wasn't like when there had been some worries at first, because when the flyer that announced the rally first appeared earlier that day, well, not earlier that day, but it was actually around, I think, May 2nd or May 3rd. It had, amongst other things, said that working men arm yourselves and appear in full force. About halfway through, they decided, you know what, we might want to just strike that one off. We don't want to cause anything. And so they redid the flyer, put out a second version later that day with that part of it stricken out. It began on the evening of May 4th. It was raining lightly. Among the speakers were August Spies, Albert Parsons, and Samuel Fielden. Who spoke to a crowd roughly between 600 to 3,000 people. They were standing in an open wagon adjacent to the square on McLean Street. And there were a bunch of on-duty police officers who were watching them nearby. Now, Spies, during this speech, was quoted as saying the following. There seems to prevail the opinion in some quarters that this meeting has been called for the purpose of inaugurating a riot, hence these warlike preparations on the part of so-called law and order. However, let me tell you at the beginning that this meeting has not been called for any such purpose. The object of this meeting is to explain the general situation of the 8-hour movement and to throw light upon various incidents in connection with it. And of course, by incidents, he was referring to the clash at McCormick Harvesting that had happened the previous day. After that, Parsons then got up to speak. At this point, the crowd was so calm that a Mayor Carter Harrison Sr., who had stopped by to watch, actually walked home early because he thought, this ain't nothing going to happen here. I'll go home. Then the British socialist Samuel Feeden then gave a 10-minute address. A lot of the crowd had actually already left by this point because, well, you know, the weather was deteriorating. It had started with a light drizzle, and it was becoming more of like a heavy downpour. And then at 10:30, just as Henry Fielden was finishing his seats, the police suddenly arrived in mass marching in formation towards the wagon. They ordered the rally to disperse. Fielden had insisted that the meeting was peaceful. And then Police Inspector John Bonfield proclaimed, "I command you in the name of the law to desist and for you, the crowd, to disperse." What happened next, nobody is really sure. Because all that is known is that at some point, somebody, nobody knows who, it could have been any of the labor agitators, it could have been the police, it could have been anybody. Somebody threw an IED. It was a homemade bomb. It was made with a brittle metal casing, was filled with dynamite, and it was ignited by a fuse.
Which has never calmed anything down ever.
Yeah, and it was thrown into the path of the advancing police. The fuse briefly sputtered because, you know, rain was coming down.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then it exploded. It killed Matthias J. Deegan, one of the police officers, and then there were metal fragments that flew, and they ended up mortally wounding 6 other police officers. In total, 8 police officers were killed. After this happened, it was sheer pandemonium after this happened. The police started loading their guns and firing. They killed 4 people, wounded as many as 70, and in less than 5 minutes, the entire square was empty except for the casualties. Depending on who you talked to, and especially if according to what newspaper you were reading, either the workers started firing on the police, or more than likely it happened the other way. Inspector Bonfield at one point wrote that he gave the order to actually cease firing, claiming that fearing that some of our men in the darkness might fire into each other. According to the Chicago Tribune, a very large number of the police were actually wounded by each other's revolvers. It was every man for himself, and while some got 2 or 3 squares away, the rest emptied their revolvers mainly into each other.
Jesus. Yeah. They reacted to things about the way they react to things now.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So, the aftermath is pretty much what you can expect. After the Haymarket incident, there was a massive amount of anti-union clampdowns. Business support and community support for the police. Many thousands of dollars were donated to funds for their medical care. The entire labor and immigrant community, particularly Germans and Bohemians, came under suspicion. Police raids were carried out on homes and offices of quote-unquote suspected anarchists. Many dozens of suspects, many who were only barely related to the affair, were arrested. The Chicago police squads actually subjected the labor activist Chicago to an 8-week shakedown. Finally, what ended up happening is that a group of 7 men were arrested, and they were brought for trial on charges of, what were they charged with? The men who were charged were, well, actually, I said 7 men. There was actually 8 But there's a popular image that goes around that shows the men that were charged, and there's only seven of them that you'll see. The number of people who were – let's see, who were the defendants? It was August Spies and Samuel Fielden, of course, were arrested. Adolf Fisher and Albert Parsons were also. A third man named Michael Schwab was arrested since he was speaking at another rally at the time of the bombing. Now, he was later pardoned. Another person that was arrested was George Engel. He wasn't directly related to the Haymarket rally, but he was notorious for his militant labor radicalism. And another gentleman named Louis Ling, who was a bit of a hot-headed bomb maker, who was denounced by Seliger. Basically, Seliger sort of talked, and he ended up pointing the finger at Louis Ling. There was another defendant, Oscar Nieb, who was an American-born citizen of German descent, who was associated with the Arbiter Zeitung newspaper and had actually attempted to revive it in the aftermath of the Haymarket riot, so he kind of got grandfathered into the whole thing. Of the eight defendants, five of them, Spies, Fisher, Engel, Ling, and Schwab, were all German-born. A sixth, Nieb, was a U.S.-born citizen who was actually of German descent. Only the remaining two, Parsons and Fielden, were born in the U.S. and England, respectively, and were of Anglo heritage. The trial, which is now known as the Illinois versus August Spies et al., began on June 21st, 1886, and it went on until August 11th. The verdict was guilty for all eight. Now, before being sentenced, Nieb told the court that Shack's officers were among the city's worst gangs, ransacking houses and stealing money and watches. Shack, of course, is referring to, Captain Shack, one of the guys who was captain of the police. Shack laughed. Nieb retorted, "You need not laugh about it, Captain Shack. You are one of them. You are an anarchist as you understand it. You are all anarchists in the sense of the word, I must say." Keep in mind that back in this time, although anarchism was a political position, it was also sort of a general term that was used somewhat synonymous in modern day prevalence to terrorists.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Seven of the defendants were sentenced by Judge Gary to death by hanging, and Nieb was sentenced to 15 years in prison. As you can imagine, the labor and workers movements in America and around the world were outraged. It basically elevated all eight of these men to the status of martyrs, especially abroad. In a article that was dateline May the 4th entitled Anarchy's Red Hand, the New York Times had described the incident as the, quote, bloody fruit of the villainous teachings of the anarchists. Chicago Times described the defendants as arch counselors of riot, pillage, incendiarism, and murder. Other reporters described them as bloody brutes, red ruffians, dynamarchists, bloody monsters, cowards, cutthroats, thieves, assassins, and fiends. Can I just point out that one of the dudes that were charged in this was actually a pastor?
Are you kidding?
Yeah. So one of them, I think it was Henry Fielding. I think it was Henry Fielding. Yeah, I think – no, it's not Henry Fielding. It's Samuel Fielding. He was a Methodist preacher.
Yeah. Yeah.
So this is – this incident – ultimately what would happen is their cases would all be appealed. And Illinois Governor Richard Oglesby would commute the sentence of both Fielden and Schwab to life in prison on November 10th, 1887. On the eve of his scheduled execution, Ling would commit suicide in his cell with a smuggled blasting cap, which he reportedly held in his mouth like a cigar. Of course, it didn't kill him instantly. He ended up blowing off half his face and basically lied there in agony for like 6 hours before he actually died.
Oh, my God. Oh,
the next day, November 11th, 1887, four of the defendants, Engel, Fisher, Parsons, and Spies, were all taken to the gallows in white robes and hoods. They sang the Marseillaise, which was then the anthem of the International Revolutionary Movement. You guys know what La Marseillaise is, right?
No.
The national anthem of France.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you know, da 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 da. Yeah, that. That's
okay.
Mm-hmm.
We know it, just don't know the name, right?
Yeah.
We don't know.
One of the people who was there who wanted to see her husband before he died was a woman by the name of Lucy Parsons. Lucy Parsons was actually amongst other things, she was another anarchist who was famously like in conflict with Emma Goldman because, well, Emma Goldman could be a bit of a firebrand, and let's be honest, she could also be a bit of an arrogant dick. But she actually would meet with people like William Morris and Peter Kropotkin. Some of you who are on there may have heard of the quote-unquote bread book at least once or twice on the internet. The bread book is Peter Kropotkin's The Conquest of Bread. Albert Parsons, by the way, was the guy who was hung. He was actually originally a Southerner who was drafted into the Confederate Army against his will. And he survived the war. Only to die because of this shit.
God damn.
In the moments before they were hanged, spies shouted to the crowd, "The time will come when our silence will be more powerful than the voices you strangled today." In their last words, Angle and Fisher called out, "Hurrah for anarchism." Parsons requested to speak, but he was cut off midway when the signal was given to open the trap door. Witnesses reported that the condemned men did not die immediately when they dropped, but strangled to death slowly, a sight which left the spectators visibly shaken. And so, this event ended up sprouting off all over the world. It absolutely angered so many people all over the world. People who were – anybody who was on the left, from like regular-ass social democrats all the way to far-left anarchists and communists and just regular old socialists and Fenians and Georgists and just everyone in between were absolutely pissed off at this, extremely. In 1889 – the first Congress of the Second International Working Men's Association. For those of you who don't know, just a little bit, kind of quick, briefly, what's commonly called the International, if you've ever heard of the song La Internacional, it's referring to the International Working Men's Association. The first one was founded by, amongst others, Karl Marx and Friedrich Engels. Mm. The second was founded by German social democrats. The third that would then come later is known as the Communist International or the Comintern, and that one was founded by Lenin and the Bolsheviks, and that was basically the last international. Trotskyists have been wanting to create a fourth international for years, but it's never happened. Anyway, they got together and they decided that on the anniversary of the Chicago Hay Market in 1890, they would all hold demonstrations to do it. Then, in 1894, the May Day riots happened, partly inspired by this. This had happened because of something known as the Panic of 1893, which was a serious economic depression that began in 1893 and ended in 1897. As you can imagine, it got workers really pissed off, and it ended up causing a riot. And then finally, in 1891... the Second International officially declared May the 1st as International Workers' Day. Later, of course, in 1917, of course, the Bolshevik Revolution would happen, and so would become the first socialist state in world history, and they actually began to institute International Workers' Day as an official holiday, and that ended up spreading through everywhere from the communist bloc to places like Great Britain and throughout Europe and Asia and Africa and South America up to today. And that has been yet another edition of Brandon's Random Factoid.
That was a good one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and there's also a little side story about what happened to Haymarket itself, isn't there, Teresa?
There is, and I've read it before, but gosh, if I can't remember, I get it mixed up with another bloody shooting.
I know for a fact that there's like that for a while there was like a statue of like the dedicated to the police officers for a little while, and then it got torn down and replaced with something else.
Yes, and I linked to that, or sent you guys a picture of that in the Skype chat. Mm-hmm. And there's many different plaques on there, and like all over is a dedication.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, now it's focused more on the victims, really.
Yeah, and now I want to remind everyone, the reason they were having this rally in the first place was because they were fighting for an 8-hour work day.
Mm-hmm.
Which is something that most of the industrialized world takes for granted.
And they absolutely shouldn't.
All right. Now, with that out of the way, it is now time to start the show proper, as we always do. And as we always do with starting the show proper, we have to start with our assholes of the week. And we got a few of them. The biggest ones probably this week are these asshole doctors from Bakersfield, California, who decided to hold a news conference to try and tell people, no, COVID-19 is not nearly as bad as the flu. You got nothing to worry about.
How about you blow it out your ass?
Yeah, I think one of these dudes already got disbarred, by the way.
Ooh.
Had his license snatched from him. But yeah, Chris?
Yeah, so they went on a news conference basically trying to come up some weird math that suggested that the rate of death for this was well under 1%. Based on their clinic, which, you know, doesn't account for what's happening in the rest of the country.
Mm-hmm.
Or anything. But yeah, the damage was done when the whole thing got posted on YouTube, got more than 5 million views, and people like Elon Musk and Fox News started spreading it, as well as they started appearing on Fox News this week. So.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they get to spread their bullshit even further from on a network that loves bullshit.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
Yeah, they definitely have gotten rebuked from a lot of health officials and medical experts. Let's see, epidemiologist Andrew Neumer said there's a lot to object to from a scientific point of view. He said one problem is that the doctors made estimates based on their clinic's clients.
Mm-hmm.
Who are tested, not a sampling of the general population. What these doctors are doing is corrupting the process from the start to make it seem like they are doing honest policy analysis. Who's an associate professor of population health and disease prevention at the University of California, Irvine.
Mm-hmm.
Prompted the American College of Emergency Physicians and American Academy of Emergency Medicine to issue a forceful joint statement on Monday calling the pair's claims reckless and untested musings that, quote, are inconsistent with current science and epidemiology regarding COVID-19. As owners of local urgent care clinics, it appears these two individuals are releasing biased, non-peer-reviewed data to advance their personal financial interests without regard for the public's health. COVID-19 misinformation is widespread and dangerous. Members of ACEP and AAEM are firsthand witnesses to the human toll that COVID-19 has taken on our communities. ACP and AAEM strongly advise against using any statements of Doctors Erickson and Masihi as a basis for policy and decision-making.
Mm-hmm.
Even health officials in their own county disagreed with them, saying, in our ongoing effort to mitigate the impacts of COVID-19 on our residents and healthcare system, continue to adhere to the guidance issued by Governor Newsom regarding the stay-at-home order, and yeah. Which, you know, it's going great in California right now with, where was it at? There's a big rally.
Mm-hmm.
Huntington Beach, which is in the OC, which is very Republican heavy.
Of course,
yeah.
OC,
area.
Orange County.
Yeah.
Because
Governor Newsom shut down the beaches.
Yeah.
Because people gather there like idiots.
Mm hmm.
So you know what they did? They gathered around an intersection. Tons of people, hundreds, maybe a few thousand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, great. You wonder when where there's going to be another spike of cases?
Probably.
Right there. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which prompted people to try and redo the whole section of the map. Scribble it out, calling it Florida.
I like those people.
That's actually pretty fucking good.
That's some good shit right there. All right. They're not the only assholes we got this week. Nope. We got a bunch of Republican governors who are basically planning to kick a shit ton of people off of unemployment if they refuse to work in unsafe conditions.
Oh, yeah. Started off by the governor of Iowa, Kim Reynolds, who plainly just said if you're an employer and you offer to bring your employees back to work and they decide not to, that's a voluntary quit. Therefore, they would not be eligible for the unemployment money. And I guess she is loosening social distancing restrictions in 77 of Iowa's 99 counties starting today. Permits restaurants, fitness centers, malls, libraries, racetracks, and certain other retail establishments to reopen in a limited fashion with public health measures in place. And yeah, this is Texas looking to do something similar because
it's Texas.
Their governor doesn't understand anything. See, given the go-ahead for retail stores, restaurants, movie theaters, and malls to reopen on Friday. Somebody should tell them malls are dead.
Yeah, right. Malls are dead.
Quit talking about them. They're just gathering places for old people. But yeah, it seems like that's the current mission statement for GOP governors is to try and get as many people off of unemployment as they can.
Yeah.
Horses.
And this proves the perfect opportunity for them.
Oh, yeah. Kill yourself or get no unemployment.
Die
because you have no money.
Let me put it this way. If you thought the bit that's happening in May Day this year is a little beyond the pale, just wait what happens when this shit goes through.
Yeah. Because already people are just ignoring the stay-at-home orders because it's getting warmer out and all that. Well, you wouldn't know that around here, but it's going to be harder to get people to realize that, you know, staying at home right now will help shorten the time you need to stay home.
Yeah, everybody keeps talking about this second wave. Dude, we haven't even crested on the first wave.
Nope.
No.
But, all right, and what else? Oh, yeah, Vice President Pence. He's another asshole of the week because he went to the Mayo Clinic to visit, and while he was there, he absolutely positively refused to wear a mask like everybody else.
Yep, all the pictures and video, you can see everybody else is wearing masks for obvious reasons. And he just played stupid afterwards, saying, well, we didn't know.
Can you not read a room?
Like, yeah, the clinic posted on their Twitter saying Mayo Clinic had informed at VP of the masking policy prior to his arrival today. It's like, of course, they would have told him everything important they needed to know. But yeah, I think even Karen Pence was defending them not wearing a mask, and I saw somebody's like, she's the most Karen that's ever Karened. But yeah, they say they briefed Pence's team in the last several days about the clinic's policy requiring face masks. The briefing came after the White House reached out last week about a potential visit. President, when the clinic told the White House about the policy, it wasn't clear whether Pence would wear a mask. Pence and his team, including reporters, arrived at the clinic. Personnel from the facility had masks available for the group. So not even an excuse of like, oh, we didn't bring one. Because obviously they have plenty of them.
Being an old, entitled, fucking white guy who's does not, the rules do not fucking apply to him.
He's like, God is my mask.
Yeah,
I guess what? You keep not wearing the mask, you'll meet him sooner than later. Yep.
And honestly, so much the better.
Well, it's more likely that he's going to give it to somebody else. I mean, the mask isn't for like his Trump? Protection. Yeah, go for it, man. Go for it. But going to the fucking Mayo Clinic and putting those people at risk. Jesus Christ. We need... Yeah. We need a lot of things.
Yeah.
Not Pence.
Well, if you don't want Pence, you know what you got to do.
Yep.
You got to get out and vote in November. Do not take it for granted.
The CDC recommended early April. Americans consider wearing face coverings when in public. And, you know, Trump's response to that. Mm-hmm. I don't think I'm going to be doing it. He said, going on to suggest it was hard to envision such a thing in the Oval Office. Wearing a face mask as I greet presidents, prime ministers, dictators, kings, queens. I just don't see it. Nobody's coming to visit you while this is going on.
Oh, yeah. Fuck, nobody's coming to America. They're going to stay the fucking hell away from here.
We got the high score.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to step up to us.
Mm-hmm. And finally, the last group of assholes we have for this week, and this happened yesterday. A bunch of armed protesters decided to storm the Michigan Capitol building over the stay-at-home orders.
Are those the assholes that I saw on... Like, I saw a meme or something that said, you know, if the military rejected you and the police rejected you, take your cowardly ass here with your guns. Was that
I think that was actually probably a photograph of the rally that happened last week. But it was probably the same group of assholes who did it, who did this. Because they basically stormed into the Capitol building, all of them carrying assault-style weapons, which I will admit, the term assault style is a very generic term and not a very well-defined one, which is kind of why when you get into the nitty-gritty of gun control legislation, we kind of run into some issues.
Yeah.
That still doesn't make it defeat the fact that these assholes have really shitty trigger discipline. Like, just a man.
Like, man, walking up to cops with your AR-15s and whatnot.
Yeah.
You look like you're needing to be arrested.
You look like you got a goddamn death wish, and you look like a fucking terrorist is what you look like.
Also, I just got to point out, if you're going to wait, just so you know, a plate carrier doesn't offer you any fucking defense unless you've actually got the plates in it. Okay? A plate carrier, you know what? You know what plate carriers are made out of? They're not made out of Kevlar. They're made out of nylon. It's basically a glorified sweater vest.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, so Governor Whitmer extended the stay-at-home mandate until the 15th. And yeah, so the protest dubbed the American Patriot Rally. It's organized by Michigan United for Liberty. Call for state businesses to reopen on May 1st in violation of state orders. It's legal to bear firearms inside the state house. Several demonstrators were openly carrying guns in the Senate gallery.
Mm-hmm.
Some armed protesters reportedly tried to enter the floor of the chamber and were blocked by state police and sergeants at arms. The state senator said several of her colleagues wore bulletproof vests. They were chanting things like, let us in, let us work, this is the people's house, you cannot lock us out. Exactly how they can't.
Mm-hmm.
One demonstrator said, the virus is here. It's going to be here. It's time to let people go back to work. That's all there is to it. It's like, that's how you spread it further, dumbasses.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Of course, Trump threw his support for these people.
Mm-hmm. Called them fine people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Fine terrorists.
Yeah, he actually used that phrase, fine people.
Yep.
Which at this point, if that's what's happening, at this point we should always figure out now that when he was talking about the very fine people after Charlottesville, we now know specifically who he was referring to.
Without a shadow of a doubt.
Like, there is no...
No.
There is no
there's no pretense whatsoever.
Vagueness, no nothing. Just
Yeah.
So we need to start just calling these people terrorists.
Yep.
Just walk up to these whorehouses and threaten their representatives with guns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But fortunately, it wasn't all bad shit. We also had some good things happen this week, and we'll be talking about them in our Heroes of the Week. And we have two. The first is a player for the Kansas City Chiefs who actually decided to go back to Canada and to help doctors as a nurse.
Nice.
I mean, hey, he's like, hey, I'm not doing anything. I might as well.
Yeah, he's from around Montreal.
Mm-hmm.
And after winning the Super Bowl in February, he kind of went back home, kind of hang out. I think he and his wife also, before they went back there, were on their on a vacation out in the Caribbean. And so obviously when they came back, it was around time that things were getting shut down. Mm-hmm. And he decided to, you know, put himself to work. Went to one of the local clinics. I think he's in an actual hospital, but in, and he doesn't actually hold, he holds a doctorate in medicine, but he doesn't have an active license. So they're kind of just putting him in a nursing role.
Yeah.
Kind of getting trained on that. I don't know if he is planning on getting his license for the short term at least. But he's at least doing a lot of work helping people as much as he can, as well as spreading the word about the things people need to do to make, keep themselves safe. Using his platform for that. And yeah, good work.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Crazy. And as for the next Hero of the Week, kind of requires a little bit of explaining. So last week, there was a rather awful mass shooting that happened in Nova Scotia.
Yeah.
Phil, can you tell us kind of what happened? Because it didn't really make a whole lot of news down here.
Well, somebody was just an idiot and decided to go shoot up a place. He's apparently a little bit on the mentally unstable side, so...
Mm-hmm. Really?
Yeah, so it wasn't... It didn't seem to be directly related to a stay-at-home order. It was just...
The dude snapped.
Timed. Yeah.
Yeah. So, in response, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau has announced a ban on 1,500 types of assault-style firearms in Canada.
That's really good, because, man, that was 8 hours of fucking terror. It sounded horrible.
Yeah.
Yep.
So let's see. Chris, tell us what type of firearms we're talking about here. Because like I said, assault style is a very generic term and kind of amorphous. So tell us what they're referring
to. They announced that licensed gun owners will no longer be able to sell, transport, import, or use these sorts of weapons in this country. They have a full list on their site, I think. Yeah, they put out a doc with all the whole list.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Firearms of the designs commonly known as the SG-550 rifle, SG-551 carbine, any variants or modified versions of them, from the SAN Swiss Arms. I assume these are different variants of that stuff. Yeah, there's a bunch of stuff here. Yeah, it's like, how many pages is this? 69 pages.
Wow.
Worth of information here.
Mm.
Lots of different types. Let's see. Yeah, it sounds like any firearm capable of discharging a projectile with a muzzle energy greater than 10,000 joules, other than one referred to in item 12, 13, 14, 20, 22, or 30 of this part, or one designed exclusively for the purpose of neutralizing explosive devices. So yeah, it's just a lot of these different bits of information for what these guns are capable of. And so, yeah, I think they're doing a 2-year amnesty period to allow people who already own these firearms to comply with the ban. Promised to pass legislation in the coming months to provide fair compensation to people who own these firearms. And yeah, it'd be enacted through regulations approved by an order in council from cabinet, not through legislation. So the government was ready to enact this campaign promise months ago before the COVID-19 pandemic disrupted the legislative agenda. And he's basically saying you don't need an AR-15 to bring down a deer.
Yeah.
No, not really.
I mean,
unless you suck as a hunter.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's
something else interesting I'm noticing about all this is that something is coming out of it that the entire world can use.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I'm not mistaken, they just came up with a pretty good
definitive classification of an assault weapon.
Yeah.
Well, it's a classification. I mean, it's better
than a classification.
It's something that I think the international community might be able to agree on as a standard.
Except for someone America. Very obvious.
Which,
by the way, I want to point out, a majority of the illegal guns that go into Canada, take a wild guess where they come from.
Hmm.
Oh, gee. Couldn't know.
That's about as low-hanging fruit as it gets.
Yeah. I've heard jokes from Canadians say maybe we should build a wall with America and make Trump pay for it.
I can see why they would say that.
I wouldn't blame.
And then Mexico said, you know, we'll build a wall on our border. And then I think someone in Germany said, we'll pitch in for a lid. But
nice.
Yeah.
This is where we're going, folks.
It's so fun to be the laughingstock of the world. But I do like that they use the Australian buyback type of thing, the compensation.
Yeah.
I like that idea is getting more traction internationally.
Yeah. We actually do have, like, buyback programs here in the U.S., but they're, like, in states that, you know, it's not a federal thing.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right, so with that out of the way, it is now time for the proper show proper. And as always, get better back up, beep, beep, here comes the COVID-19 dump truck.
Well, a little bit lighter than past weeks this week. So.
Yeah, but no less disastrous.
Right? I think that I think we're getting fatigued from talking about it. It's becoming a new normal.
So first thing first. Worldwide, there are now 3.3 million registered cases and 237,000 deaths worldwide. In the United States, we recently passed the 1 million cases mark. It's now 1.1 million, and 65,000 people in the United States have died because of it, a disproportionate amount of whom are non-white.
Yeah.
I want to point that out.
Yeah.
And New York is almost at 1 million tested. Mm-hmm.
I will endeavor to hide my surprise.
On top of that, 3.8 million more people filed for unemployment this week, bringing total to about 30 million. There is roughly about 300 million people in the United States.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is about 20% of the workforce right now.
And, of course, that doesn't take into account people, like yours truly, who cannot file for unemployment.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yep. And you think, you know, I'd be able to. I've worked many, many months, but no. Independent
contractor?
Not independent. I'm W-2. I'm not 1099. But I'm not paying into unemployment. They're not paying in the people that hire me, and then my recruiting company is not paying in. So unless I get COVID-19 or my family gets COVID-19, there's no unemployment possibilities.
Jesus.
So, and there's no employment possibilities. Let me fucking tell you that. The only nibble that I got was for $15 an hour less than what I made.
Urf.
Uh-huh. And it wasn't for a small company either. It was for a big fucking company.
Mm.
So say hello to everybody getting fucked over without any lube, you know, salary-wise, because that's probably coming. Yep.
Like I said, this is how we get snow crash.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they mentioned here from a survey by the Economic Policy Institute that it could be up to 12 million more people have lost jobs by having filed a claim for benefits.
Yeah.
Either because they couldn't get it through their state's overwhelmed system, or they didn't try, because some of them are convoluted to get through.
Mm-hmm.
Intentionally.
Yeah. Next
and there's
step.
Some that I also point out before we go on to the next story, there's some companies that are being really, really shitty and using this as an opportunity to get rid of problematic employees.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And that usually includes people who have, maybe said a word or two about unionization.
Mm-hmm.
Or have higher insurance costs for the company and cost the company money.
Mm.
Yeah, there's a whole lot of reasons people get rid of them. Or they're pregnant.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. I don't know. I think I might move to Vietnam.
Might not be a bad move.
Better help.
Apparently they're kicking the virus's ass down there.
Mm. Yeah.
And you're basically got a work guarantee down there, too. So, hey. But anyway, next up, you know all those small business loans that were going out? and a lot of it ended up going to not small businesses at all?
Shake Shack?
Yeah. Or Chris whatever, Steakhouse,
Chris,
whatever.
Chris.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck them.
Well, you know who else got a $4.6 million small business loan? The Lakers.
What?
A sports team?
Yep.
Yeah, they have less than 300 employees.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't take that much to run a team.
Which technically makes them a small business.
Except they're one of the most popular sports teams in the world.
Yeah.
I think they might be second in the NBA to the Knicks.
Yeah. Now, I want to point out they did return it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they should
they
have
did
gotten
return
it in the first place.
Yeah.
Also goes to show there's no oversight going on here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, there's probably some oversight. It's just the worst people.
No, not much oversight. I mean, there should be a Ways and Means Committee going over, like, fucking all of this.
Mm. Yeah, this is the Trump administration. All of the positions that need to be filled will never be filled, and all the positions you hope just never get filled again will inevitably be filled by the worst people that could possibly go into them.
Cronyism.
Yeah, I was reading that he's basically just pocketing campaign funds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At this point, can't get any trouble because I think it's only 3 of the 6 spots at the top of the FTC are filled, and they need 4 to be able to vote. On this sort of issue. So he's not going to fill it.
By design.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. By the way, something I recently found out. When people are talking about Amendment 25, where you can, like, get rid of the president if, you know, the rest of the cabinet deems him to be incompetent.
Shit.
Yeah. I just found out recently they actually cannot do that because – technically, the cabinet still isn't completely full. There are still places that are still, like, being inhabited by acting whatever and not, like, people actually.
By design.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you know what Mitch McConnell's top priority when the Senate gets back in the session?
Oh, gee, I wonder.
Judicial fillings.
Yep.
Not anything relating to anything that's going on in this country.
Mm-mm. Nope.
Relating to their bottom line and nobody's standard of living whatsoever.
He is, I think he's kind of in panic mode right now and trying to get all of this shit done before November. Because I don't know if you've looked lately, but his numbers in Kentucky are fucking plummeting.
Yep.
Yep.
Like very, very fast.
Now he's well and truly fucked.
Better believe I'm looking.
Yeah. And by the way, since I should bring it up, Georgia is a state that is now in play. So we could end up becoming a blue state in November, which would be amazing. I would love for that to happen.
I mean, come on, Atlanta. Carry the rest of Georgia like Chicagoland carries Illinois.
Yeah.
Because you better believe anybody south of fucking I-80, they're not Democratic. They're Republican.
Yeah. Oh, man. Oh, I cannot wait until November gets here. Mm-hmm. You know, other than the fact that we will almost certainly be in a second wave of COVID-19 by the time that happens.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't care if I have to go out in a hazmat suit. I will vote.
Yep.
Anyway, next up, JetBlue is the first major U.S. airline to require all passengers to wear masks.
Okay.
So,
and I believe also part of this is they're not selling the middle seat.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be one major bonus.
Mm-hmm.
Well, would they do that to with a family unit of 3?
Oh, yeah. This is a major American airline we're talking about here.
I mean, yeah.
They basically have all of us by the balls, and they aren't letting go.
Mm-mm. Well, who's fucking going? And never mind. I know who's going places. I know who's vacationing.
Yeah.
Don't.
That is a question with a dynamite of an answer.
Well,
not because it's a good answer, but because it will set off a very explosive reaction.
Yeah,
Illinois so Governor Pritzker went on vacation with his family to Florida.
Yep.
Not super thrilled about that, but going to assume that they own a house there and nobody else has been in it. And he was taking some sort of private plane and doing a vacation the way that none of the rest of us can fucking do it.
My parents are going down there next week.
I remember you talking about that.
Well, they were originally going to go this week, but my grandmother has made it known that she is going to need an assisted living person to come live with her. So we have to wait for like the nurse to go, you know, survey and doctor's recommendation and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But that should be done by the end of next week, so they'll be going down there. I don't know. I think I've said this before. My parents are part of a timeshare down at Okaloosa Island.
You may have.
Yeah. And they're basically required to go down there like 3 or 4 times a year to, you know, do maintenance and stuff like that. There's like a ownership council they got to go on and all that stuff.
That's too much like work requirements. Oh my
god.
Yeah,
but they get good money out of it because, you know, they rent it to other people.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So this is them kind of maybe not so much vacationing period, but vacationing and taking care of their
Vacationing in the sense that they're going down to a vacation spot, but it's partly work.
It's a side hustle.
Yeah. It's a side hustle. They're both retired now too, so yeah.
When they're gone, you just wrap everything they own in plastic wrap.
Yeah,
that's what you
get. I am probably going to set off a bug bomb in here.
You're going to be too busy taking care of the pets.
Well, no, Brody goes with them.
Ah.
So it's just me and Coconut.
Okay.
And he's surprisingly much quieter when they're gone.
If you do not take this opportunity to walk around naked, dude, I don't know what's wrong with you.
Oh, the clothes are coming off the minute they go out the door.
That might have been more information than I really needed. But okay, thanks.
Yeah, well, it's my fucking show. So, but anyway, next up, some of you may remember the scandal that happened with the heiress to the Hot Pockets fortune.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, well, her prison sentence has actually been delayed because of the virus.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's supposed to start next week, and it's been delayed. She's sentenced to 5 months behind bars, paying a fixer to get her daughters into the USC. I'd been ordered to surrender on Thursday, but now may remain free until at least June 30th. The judge ruled against her bid to have her entire sentence served under house arrest.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, you're going to do the thing everybody else is doing.
Mm-hmm.
Except you're not going to have to do jail time because of it.
Yep.
Yeah, the judge will not forfeit his obligation to impose a sentence that is warranted by a defendant's criminal conduct, but he left the door open for another delay if the outbreak has improved by the summer.
Mm-hmm. All right.
So, hey.
Yeah.
This is why you donate to the school to bribe your kids to get in instead of fixers.
Yeah.
It's much
cheaper. So, amongst other things, a bunch of industries have sort of taken a hit because of this, and one of them is frites, mom frites. You know, what the rest of the world calls French fries, which you may know the Belgians are really into.
Yep.
So much so that Belgians have been asked to actually double their intake of fries to make up for waning demand.
Is this related to the huge stacks of potatoes, apparently, that aren't – they're just rotting?
Yeah, well, it's not just potatoes. There's a bunch of, like, produce and shit that's rotting in the fields because farmers ain't got nowhere to sell them.
Yeah.
Yep. It's a crisis of overproduction. It's like one of the big issues of this generation. It's an issue in capitalism generally, but it's especially an issue right now.
Yeah, it's the whole world hunger thing is a matter of logistics.
Yeah, logistics and artificial scarcity.
Oh, yeah.
Now, some countries have sort of started things where they are legally requiring, like, all grocery stores to, like, give any excess food that is still edible to, like, local food shelters and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because remember, when you see a sell-by date or a, you know, good-by date on food, that doesn't necessarily mean that the food is not edible after that. It just means that it's no longer considered presentable enough to be sold.
That's manufacturer dates.
Yes.
There's no body that determines that stuff.
Yeah.
Yep. They it's a voluntary thing, like the ESRB.
Yep. So, and by the way,
except the ESRB gets submitted to a third party.
Yeah.
Instead of the people making it, putting their own thing on there.
Yeah. For the record, I just want to point out, when it sounds like, you know, there's like Belgians, they need to load up on their fries. Have you ever had Belgian fries before?
No.
You want to have a double intake of that shit. Because here's the thing. Pommes frites.
Does that precede the double bypass?
Yeah, well, actually, pommes frites are actually on – they're much closer to, like, the chips you get in fish and chips. They tend to be, like, thicker, and there's more – there's less oil used per amount, you know?
Now I've got some.
And it's like a whole – it's not just a food. It's like a whole cuisine. You know, they've got, like, different varieties depending on the potato used. They have all types of sauces and toppings that they've created specifically for it. Yeah.
Yeah, so
– this is not what I need to be hearing so long before payday.
Yeah. And there's usually at least, like, in a lot of the big cities here in the U.S., there's usually, like, one pommes frites place somewhere. Especially, like, in places like L.A. and New York. You can definitely – and I think there's one in Chicago, too.
I'll have to find out.
Yeah, so this is coming from the Belgian potato industry,
mm-hmm.
their trade association for that. Because I guess they got like 5,000 frites stands in Belgium.
That
seems like a lot for a small country like that.
Well, isn't Belgium like roughly a little bit larger than like what? Belgium's not a particularly large country. We already know that.
Yeah.
But you got 5,000 of those. That's kind of like how there's like 1,000 or so cheesesteak places in Philly. It's just one of those things.
They will self-justify.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're calling the population at large due its part by keeping deep fryers fired up on the home front.
Mm-hmm.
Traditionally, Belgians eat fries once a week, and it's always a festive moment. Said Romain Cools, Secretary General of Industry Group's Belgipom, said in a phone interview Tuesday, "Now we are asking them to eat frozen fries twice a week at home. The demand for frozen potatoes has nosedived in recent weeks. The Belgian industry faces a possible loss of up to 125 million euros or $135.5 million if hundreds of tons of surplus potatoes don't move this year.
Yep.
It's the first time in my 30-year career that I need to call on authorities for help. Potato sector is so important, it should be helped because it's a flagship for a whole industry. But it's a hell of a thing, the potato sector."
Hey.
But yeah, they set up a program.
I ain't criticizing.
25 tons of potatoes a week to food banks. Businesses are working to export some of their supplies to Central Europe and Africa, where the demand remains high. And Belgians eat about 38 kilograms or 84 pounds of fresh potatoes. And 6 to 7 kilograms or 13 to 15 pounds of processed potatoes at homes every year.
Mm-hmm.
Even if consumers unite in upping per capita consumption of fries, the potato sector won't emerge from the pandemic unscathed.
Mm-hmm. You'll notice, though, how they said they have it once a week.
Yeah.
That's kind of a reason why there isn't as big of an obesity epidemic over there. Because on top of being, you know, a whole cuisine in and of itself, it's also a special occasion.
Yeah. Geez, I can't say that we've had potatoes only once a week here. I mean, you know?
Yeah.
We're not eating them that way, but, man, potatoes are fucking potatoes, and they're good.
Yeah. All right, so that's it for this week's load of the COVID-19 dump truck. Come back next week when we'll have a fresh load all ready for your face. Yeah, anyway. All right, we got some political news. So this is funny. So here in the United States, we basically have two political parties that are the major. There's the Republican Party, also known as the GOP. And then, of course, there's the Democratic Party, or the Democrats. And in New York, the Democratic Party, which, by the way, in their name is the word democratic, as in democracy, decided to cancel the presidential primary in the state of New York.
Yep.
Well, I mean, it's the primary. Everything's pretty much fucking decided.
Yeah, but see, here's the thing. Remember, even though Bernie Sanders is no longer actively campaigning,
he still needs those delegates.
Yeah, he needs those
delegates. New York's a big take.
Yeah. Now, I have been told that apparently both the Sanders campaign and the Biden campaign have been negotiating over delegates for the last couple weeks. But yeah, New York's a big take. And apparently it might not stand because apparently the Sanders campaign has filed suit.
Okay.
Saying, you know, we weren't even notified of this. It was just a thing they suddenly decided.
Yep. Yep, having forgotten about the delegates, yeah, this actually is a pretty big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, as long as they do it better than what we did here, which is they moved up the primary so people couldn't apply for their mail. It was mail-in only, so you had to apply for the absentee ballots instead of, I don't know, sending it to all the people that were registered. So that meant if you didn't know that it was moved up, you don't get to participate. Which is what happened for me. I thought it was in June. Well, that shit. I think they only allowed in person. There's only like 88 places to vote in the state instead of like a few thousand. So it was severely restricted. Mm. It sounded like there was other stuff on the ballots.
Yeah.
Various ballots for, you know, raising money for stuff and all that kind of state and local spots as well.
Shit.
So it's like, oh, this is a test. Like, well, they fucking failed. Yeah. Like, also because a lot of the people that were going to get the mail-in ballots didn't get it on time because they fucking overloaded the mail system. Because you did all this shit the last moment. So yeah, they probably shouldn't do this in fucking in November. Should fucking send it out and say, "Hey, we're gonna extend the deadline to get this stuff back."
This is just such a shit show.
Oh yeah.
Hey, that would give Trump a reason to be mad at the USPS again.
Right. He loves that.
Oh yeah.
He is a fucking old person. He complains about the post office.
Yeah.
Now, what is with his whole hate on against the post office?
They're not a private company?
Yep.
Yeah, more or less.
They're not as out to make money off of people like UPS and FedEx and all them are?
Also, they have rarely, if ever, operated at a loss. They usually end up...
Jealousy.
Yeah. Well, that, and plus it's a nationalized business that actually turns a profit for the United States government.
Yeah, they're not out to scam people, so that's immediately a red flag for Trump.
Yep. But, yeah. Other political news. Who here is familiar with a gentleman by the name of Justin Amash?
I am.
Yeah,
I think we've talked about him on the show a few times.
Yeah, Justin Amash was basically the one Republican in the room during Trump's impeachment hearings that apparently had anything close to a spine. And because of it, he basically ended up leaving the Republican Party, and he's basically an independent now.
Okay.
And he has put forth that he is exploring the options to be a presidential run as a Libertarian nominee in 2020.
Unexpected.
Whether or not
the conservative vote.
Yeah, but it also means that it'll turn away Republicans who hate Trump enough that they would actually vote for Biden.
Yeah, here's your Jill Stein.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's kind of what the issue is here.
Yeah. And I like the end of this article in the AP. Mm-hmm. There's just one sentence at the end. It says, Trump has called Amash a, quote, total loser. So that's a weird thing to put in this article.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Just...
No, okay. If I were him, I would turn that into a selling point.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, get Beck on board. Maybe he'll let him borrow some of the lyrics of Loser.
Yeah. Just
steer into it.
Yep.
Yeah, right?
Hey, it worked for Buster Douglas and Sega.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And now for some good news. You ready for some good news? Some genuinely good news? The NCAA is finally going to allow athletes to make money off their name, image, and likeness.
Oh.
Yep.
Oh, fucking time. The
NCAA's top governing body is supporting a proposal to allow college athletes to sign endorsement contracts, receive payment for other work, provided the schools they attend are not involved in any of the payments. And yeah, there's still finalizing need to be done for this. They'll have a group that is assembled to get this down in writing for rules changes. But I believe it's not going to be able to go into effect until at least 2021.
Mm.
But it's a welcome change. As they're starting to see some of their bigger basketball prospects deciding not to go to college and instead going into the NBA's G League. Which is offering, you know, a salary up front in exchange for, you know, getting some work in before going into the draft there, which is a big change compared to what college does, which is exploit them.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And there's a reason why South Park made all those allusions to the slave trade when it came to college sports for that one episode.
Yep.
Yeah, wasn't far off.
Yeah. Next up, Tesla. Tesla has lost $14 billion in value because Elon Musk can't stop tweeting stupid shit.
Yep.
And he basically tweeted, Tesla stock price too high, IMO, which knocked $3 billion off of his own stake in Tesla because investors probably bail it out of the company.
Well, I mean,
that's... you shouldn't be tweeting about that kind of thing at all because of a FTC injunction.
Yeah.
So, let's see. The Wall Street Journal reported it asked him if he was joking about the share price tweet, whether it had been vetted. Receiving the reply, no. Tesla's share price has surged this year, putting the carmaker's value at close to $100 billion. Which would trigger a bonus payment of hundreds of millions of dollars to Elon Musk. Also tweeting weird stuff like, I am selling almost all physical possessions, will own no house. Then replying to that saying, my girlfriend Grimes is mad at me.
Okay, I think he's like, losing the plot at this point. It kind of sounds that
people
way.
Suggest he, wow. might be, he might have been high. At the time, that he's just...
Ah, you think?
Wouldn't be the first time.
Paranoid. Doing some paranoid shit.
Mm-hmm. And also, he's a crazy person. I'll just point that out.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. He was also I think he's also... Yeah, his house apparently is... used to be Gene Wilder's house. Said one stipulation, I own Gene Wilder's old house. It cannot be torn down or lose any of its soul.
Okay.
He's high as fuck.
Wow.
He's just going on, man.
Yeah.
Which I think earlier this week he was very critical of them not opening up the economy.
Mm.
Which is like, you're worth fucking billions of dollars, dude. Shut the fuck up.
Exactly.
Yeah. Did any of these tweets happen on the 20th of April?
No, May 1st.
Mm. Okay, so he has no excuse then.
I mean, to be fair, he can really afford some premium blow.
Oh, yeah.
All right, and next up, we got some science news. Spinosaurus.
Yeah. He tweeted out the latest part of the national anthem.
Can he share? Because, I mean...
That's some good shit he's on.
Yeah.
It's like, starting with the and the rockets.
Want to tell us player. Who your dealer is, man? Like...
Also, another tweet is rage against the dying of the light of consciousness.
Shit.
Yeah, he's definitely...
Oh, yeah, he's baked.
Yeah.
The ice cream didn't fall off his cone.
Mm-hmm. Also, his avatar on Twitter is the box star for Deus Ex.
Because, of course, it is.
Oh, there's so much to unpack here.
Oh, my God.
And his latest image he's posted to his account is a anime Bitcoin lady. Saying, okay. Replying to a Bitcoin tweet saying, how much for some anime Bitcoin?
Well, very long.
Yeah.
And this guy's worth billions of dollars.
Yep.
Okay, so it's because when he did the Tesla stock price tweet, Bitcoin replied, Bitcoin price is too low, IMO. And he said, how much for some anime Bitcoin?
That doesn't even make sense.
He just gives no fucks at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's worth billions of dollars. He doesn't have to give a fuck about anything.
I guess.
All right. Next up, we got some science news. First science news, the Spinosaurus. It was discovered recently that it had like a long-ass eel tail, which basically means that it was, in fact, a fully aquatic dinosaur.
Cool. Yeah, the only one of its kind.
Yeah, literally the only one we know of. There's also there are other water based dinosaurs like the plesiosaur, but that one's more like a
same
that
kind of dinosaur.
Yeah,
they're a different type. I forget what the type is called.
Mm-hmm.
I'd ask Blathers more about that. but yeah, so the Spinosaurus has been a mysterious dinosaur that has been pretty rare to find because it largely existed around like the Middle East, I believe. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so it was very much an outdated dinosaur as far as like what we knew about it compared to many of the others that are around. I'm trying to see the most recent one they had until this. These like recent spate of discoveries was an 1854 sculpture of the thing, which is not particularly great. But yeah, the let's see, this was part of a National Geographic study that was going on. Paleontologist, National Geographic explorer Nizar Ibrahim, assistant professor of biology at University of Detroit Mercy, began proposing the largest dinosaur predator ever discovered, the Spinosaurus, may have lived a primarily aquatic lifestyle. Paleontological community was hesitant to agree. While adaptations like conical teeth for eating fish and flat-bottomed feet for paddling suggested a semi-aquatic lifestyle, with the Spinosaurus hunting in and along waterways, there wasn't yet justification to rethink dinosaurs as fully occupying aquatic ecosystems as completely as on land. Mm. But yeah, these recent discoveries were able to confirm that. They found more of a complete spine that showed the tail-propelled aquatic locomotion in a theropod dinosaur. And it presented unambiguous evidence for an aquatic propulsive structure in a dinosaur. Mm-hmm. Spinosaurus had long spines emerging from its tail vertebrae, forming a flat paddle for propelling it through the water. This could have been a real long-term invasion of aquatic habitats by dinosaurs, which is something that up to this point was kind of unthinkable. Like the main reason why people were reluctant to accept Spinosaurus as a fully aquatic animal. So up until now, we didn't really have the propulsive structure, the motor that would propel these animals through the water. Yeah. And now we have it.
Cool.
And it mostly lived around modern-day Morocco to Egypt in ponds, lakes, and rivers that were around there. An area approximately the size of the continental United States, Ibrahim referred to it as the River of Giants, because the colossal animals the sprawling ecosystem supported, including the car-sized coelacanth, lungfish, and sawfish with 8-foot snouts and barbed teeth. Despite what the Sahara is now, it used to be full of water and life and all that kind of stuff back then. And yeah, the Spinosaurus is, you know, huge, 50 foot long, 16,000 pounds, skull nearly as long as a person is tall. Sported a neural spine sail, which Ibrahim and 8 co-authors suggest in 2014 maybe functioned as a display that could be seen above water, like a shark fin 6 feet tall, that kind of stuff. But yeah, the only specimen they had, the only skeleton they had, was found in Egypt in 1915 and was in Munich in the 40s. What do you think happened then?
Yeah.
Shit went kind of
sideways. By bombers.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Since then, Spinosaurus vertebrae, teeth, and snout bones have been uncovered in the desert-bound geological Kemkem beds, where an expedition led by Ibrahim, paleontologist Samir Sori, the Université Hassan II in Casablanca, and paleontologist David Martill of the University of Portsmouth uncovered additional Spinosaurus bones in 2013. And so, yeah, that's kind of where they're getting all this stuff from. So, yeah, like the getting full skeletons of these guys has been incredibly hard. Mm-hmm. Imagine, because digging in sand is probably not the easiest thing to do.
Right.
Nope.
So yeah, there's a lot more information here, but the National Geographic article has a lot of stuff too.
All right. And now, get ready for some good news. You ready for some really good news?
What?
Okay.
You guys heard recently that there was like a massive ozone hole that opened up over the Arctic. It was like the largest ever recorded.
Yeah.
Yeah, guess what? It's closed. It has closed. It is no longer there.
Huh.
The hole is finally closed.
And you want to know why?
Humans. Doing shit.
Yeah, because of the lockdowns that have happened over the COVID-19 epidemic.
We're too quarantined to fuck with the environment.
Yeah, and so the ozone layer over there was actually able to repair itself.
Actually, it probably wasn't.
Yeah, but it seems nice to think about it that way.
Yeah.
No, tell us what actually happened.
So this was the result of an intense polar vortex that was going on up at the Arctic.
Mm-hmm.
It was tied to, what was it here? Ozone levels above the Arctic reached a record low in March. Severe ozone depletion was certainly unusual. 1997 and 2011 are the only other years on record when similar stratosphere depletions took place over the Arctic. While such low levels are rare, they're not unprecedented. Let's see. Human-made chemicals called chlorofluorocarbons have been destroying the layer for the past century, eventually causing the famous hole that formed in Antarctica in the 1980s. Experts pointed to unusual atmospheric conditions to cause the most recent hole, leading to industrial chemicals interacting with high altitude clouds at normally low temperatures. This year's low Arctic ozone happens about once per decade. Paul Newman, chief scientist of Earth Sciences at NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center in Greenbelt, Maryland, for the overall health of the ozone layer, this is concerning since Arctic ozone levels are typically high during March and April. Covered an area about 3 times the size of Greenland. Expected to heal as temperatures increased, breaking down the Arctic polar vortex and allowing ozone-depleted air to mix with ozone-rich air from lower latitudes.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah.
Yep.
Nature doing its thing.
Yeah. But it seemed nice for a minute to think about it. Yeah.
We didn't really create this hole.
No. No.
But we probably didn't help.
No. Anyway, so next up, we got another story here. We got entertainment stuff. So first and foremost, AMC Theaters, they have refused to play Universal films after Universal ended up releasing the Trolls sequel on video on demand.
Yep.
Yeah, they're having a little temper tantrum.
Yep.
I was mad.
Yeah. Yep. I think it did about $100 million on VOD rentals
mm-hmm.
in its first 3 weeks in North America because they decided to say, screw the theater release. We're just putting it out.
Yeah.
And did really well.
You know, it's kind of amazing because it's a bad movie.
Oh, captive audience, too.
Yeah, that's true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which is not that far behind the $116 million the original movie made in its first 3 weeks at the box office.
Oh, yeah, I forgot to mention. That first movie was terrible, but it was also a huge financial success.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let's see. Yeah, results for Trolls World Tour has exceeded our expectations, demonstrated the viability of PVOD, which is Premium Video On Demand. As soon as theaters reopen, we expect to release movies on both formats. And a strongly worded letter to Universal Filmed Entertainment Group Chairman Donna Langley, AMC Theaters Chairman and CEO Adam Aron said Shell's comments were unacceptable. AMC is the largest circuit in the world. Quote, it is disappointing to us, but Jeff's comments as to Universal's unilateral actions and intentions to have left us with no choice. Therefore, effective immediately, AMC will no longer play any Universal movies, any of our theaters in the United States, Europe, or the Middle East.
Yeah, we can't have Universal making money that doesn't go through us, so.
And I gotta say, Universal probably doesn't give two motherfucking shits.
Nope.
Nope, there's at least a few other big chains here in the U.S. They will happily take their movies.
Yeah.
Because now they're going to be more exclusive to those two or three out there.
Cinemark.
And Regal.
Yeah.
Those are like the three big ones there.
Yeah. And I've been saying that, you know, this whole artificial demarcation of when a movie can play where is kind of outdated anyway. So
yeah.
It's all built up to exploit people for more money.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, hey, you can go to the theater and watch this movie, you know, 15 times. Mm. Or you can rent it at home and watch it a bunch for the whatever, $20 or whatever they're charging.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, it's a deal for a family of three, for sure. For a lot of theaters, for a family of two or a couple, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This being a kid's movie is perfect for people that have kids.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, here, shut up and watch this for the next 48 hours.
Right? And, like, the parents don't have to fucking watch that bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
I got dragged to the first one, and I'm still pissed off about it.
Oh, yeah, because here's the thing. Not only is it a movie featuring probably one of the most infuriating / creepy children's toys ever made, it was also a jukebox musical.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe this one's more into the rock music.
Yep.
Hence the
world tour.
Yeah.
Anyway, next up, Michelle Obama. You guys know the Obamas have made production deals with Netflix. And Michelle Obama's documentary Becoming is coming out on May 6th. So that's coming Wednesday.
Yep. Mm. Yeah, they got a trailer out too if you want to watch it. But it is about Michelle Obama, the existence of which has been kept top. This documentary has been kept secret. Let's see. Originally from Higher Ground, the production company run by former President Barack Obama, also did American Factory, that won an Oscar recently. Let's see.
Which, by the way, that is a movie I think everybody should watch.
Hmm.
American Factory.
Yeah.
That movie can be a real eye opener for some people.
Hmm. And
they do good stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it seems like it's the same name as Obama's memoir. and sort of tells her side of the whole thing.
Okay. Yep.
Also picks up where that story left off by following her on the 34 city tour that she undertook while promoting her book.
Mm-hmm. All right. And last but not least, we got a trailer for the HBO series produced by Jordan Peele, Lovecraft Country, which is based on a book by, I believe his name is Chris Buff?
Matt Ruff.
Matt Ruff. Wow, I was way off. But yeah, it's sort of mixes like Lovecraftian horror with the history of race relations in the United States.
Yep, set in the 50s.
Yep.
Let's see. Debuts in August. Falls Atticus Freeman as he joins up with his friend Letitia and his uncle George to embark on a road trip across 1950s Jim Crow America in search of his missing father. This begins a struggle to survive and overcome both the racial terrors of white America and the terrifying monsters that could be ripped from a Lovecraft paperback.
Mm-hmm.
Executive produced by Misha Green, who also serves as a showrunner, as well as G.G. Abrams, Jordan Peele, Bill Carraro, and Jan Demange. And some of the other people that direct various episodes in this series. That's like produced by three of the production companies from those people, Misha Green, J.J. Abrams, and Jordan Peele, as well as with HBO. You can definitely tell Jordan Peele's involved with this.
Oh, yeah.
It has that vibe all over it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you know how with the trailers for Us, they had I Got Five on it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and how they took that song and somehow managed to make it super creepy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they did the same thing for Land of a Thousand Dances.
Yeah, it looks... It's insane enough that it could actually work. I kind of like what I see.
Well, it's based on the book, and the book itself is definitely, I've been told, a good read, so...
Mm. Yeah, maybe the only issue with this is they show the monsters. So I should keep that a little
bit.
Yeah,
but only some. I'm not sure if they show all of them.
Yeah, probably more, so...
All right. Well, folks, I do believe we have ourselves a show.
Yes.
So I would like to remind all of our listeners, if you got a question, comment, something you want us to read on the air, you can get in contact with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got it linked for you in the show notes. Also, on top of Apple Podcasts, you can catch our little bit of unscripted shenanigans at TuneIn, Google Play, RSS, archive.org, or pretty much any kind of podcast aggregator you can think of. And if we're not on there, just wait a few minutes, because we will be on there, and like, what the hell else are you going to do? Go outside?
Yep.
So, for Filippo D'Onofrio, Patrick Mifflin, Teresa Sammons, and Chris Elogi, I would like to say, I hope y'all had a happy, good May Day. So, good night, sleep tight, and workers of the world, unite.